ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
My name is Vaisheshika Das. It's nice to meet those of you who I haven't met yet. I'm from the Bay Area originally. I grew up in Lafayette, over in the East Bay. And in 1973, I came to live in San Francisco in the mission. Are we in the mission now? Where are we?
South of Market.
Well, the first temple that I moved into was like a center like this, a little larger. It was in the mission. And that was a center dedicated to spiritual practice. And that developed over the years. For many, many years, you know, we had access to these spiritual centers in San Francisco. And then it moved to Berkeley. And for many years, we haven't had such a presence here in San Francisco. So this is a long cherished desire to be back in San Francisco, to have bhakti sessions here for everybody. Are you all comfortable? Because if you'd like to move up a little bit more, it'll probably give more space for those of you in the back who look like you're not sure where to sit. Please feel free to move up. I did bathe at least 2 weeks ago. I'm vegetarian. No harm.
And there's still concerts at the Fillmore.
What's that? There's still concerts at the Fillmore? Okay, cool.
I was at one.
And you were just there. And how is everyone tonight?
Very good.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
10.
12. That's extraordinary, because it's not easy to stay at a 10. But the process of bhakti really is how to find that happiness that's at a 10 in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the main text for those who are practicing bhakti. Actually, there are several that are foundational, but the Bhagavad Gita is the basic book of bhakti. In that book, Krishna says something extraordinary, and that is that when one comes to see one's spiritual nature, and one experiences a state of happiness in which he or she thinks there's no greater gain. That's pretty rare in this world, because whatever things we get, we normally think there's something better than that. At first it may seem good, but then later on it seems as if it's disappointing. But the spiritual experience is never disappointing, and it's ever fresh and new. Remarkably, it's readily available to everyone, and that's because we are spiritual. It's our natural condition to be happy. It's only because of distraction by lower energies that we lose the sense of our eternality, the knowledge that we have, which is expansive, and also our bliss, our happiness. And so the process of Krishna consciousness is very natural. It's not something artificial, but it's something that is inherent in us, the propensity to love. In fact, every living entity has a propensity to love. If you look at kittens, or if you look at some, what's the plural of moose? I got you stumped on that one. Nobody from Canada here, right? If you look at orangutans, elephants, what are their animals?
Monkeys.
They all have a propensity to love, although sometimes I wonder about monkeys. I just came from India, I saw a lot of monkeys. They do like to quarrel, especially the rhesus monkeys. They're always chattering, fighting, breaking things, stealing things, and so forth. But that's also the nature of the living force. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, we're always active. Even in our liberated state, even in the state of spiritual consciousness, we're active. So bhakti really is the natural state of activity for the spiritual self. And yoga really means, comes from the root word in Sanskrit, yuj, which means to connect. It means to reconnect to our original divine source. It's personal. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the process through which we do that is a spiritual process. And I was reading the card when I came in here, and it says on this invitation card, among other things, sing, dance, learn, meditate, feast. Did you see this? Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? So about singing. This is something normally we do when we're happy. In fact, I mean, there's different kinds of singing. Some people can sing professionally. But normally, if you just sing on your own, because not because you're being paid or you're making a new album or something like that, for all you professional singers out there, that it normally means you're in some kind of happy state. Otherwise, why would you sing? Anybody here sing in the shower? One, two, three, four, five. Okay, you can all admit it. You're pretty happy if you do that. Why else would you sing? It's an expression that comes from deep within. And bhakti means singing, singing spiritually. It's very natural to sing when you're happy. And conversely, if you sing, you'll become happy. It's one of the great secrets of bhakti. Sometimes we don't feel happy, but if you sing anyway, especially a spiritual song, it's a higher vibration, then you'll naturally feel happy anyway. And there's a whole tradition of singing that comes from the spiritual realm, that is the realm of yoga and bhakti. There are many, many songs that are within the original texts that teach about the knowledge of yoga. The fact that they're written as songs that you can sing, different rhythms and meters and so on. And this is really the universal language. Anywhere you go in the world, if you hear good rhythm and a nice song, well, what do you think your reaction will be?
Yeah, good.
You feel like moving, dancing, and so forth, and it's attractive. I've seen it in countries around the world. You know, I'm just walking down the street, and you hear the rhythm, the local rhythm, and you find people moving, swaying, happily, appreciating when there's good music and rhythm. And it also moves us in different ways. Those who study music know there are various major chords, minor chords, different ways in which we're affected by the tonalities of music. Major, kind of bright and happy, so it's like describing in Western music terms. Minor chords, melancholy, can be a little bit dark. And when we employ the mantra, man means mind and tra means to deliver, in song, what happens is the heart opens, because we're naturally attracted to rhythm and song. And the mantra, which is like kind of spiritual medicine, it goes deep within the heart. You know how it gets in there?
Vibration.
I mean, how do you put something in your heart?
Through the ears.
You have a ringer up here on it. Huh?
Through the ears.
That is correct, yes. It goes into the ears. In fact, it's mentioned in the bhakti scriptures that the way you take your medicine to go into the heart is through the ears. Imagine that. That's the channel through which you get medicine to go in the heart. So when you hear spiritual sound, it goes into the ears and then ends up within the heart. And it's said that the heart is the driver of the chariot. The body is like a chariot, isn't it? And we go where the heart directs us. Our head may tell us something else, but ultimately we follow our heart, don't we? And so when our heart is transformed, then we go in various directions. And so the process of bhakti, this singing that's mentioned here, is really a potent process for self-realization, although it's disguised as fun, because everyone likes to sing and make rhythm. At the same time, it's actually transformative. In fact, if you look up in the dictionary what mantra means, it means a sound vibration that transforms. So this is one of the ways to transform. Oftentimes people think, how can I transform my life? really have to do it from the inside out, don't we? And how do we transform the inside? Well, the mantra is known to be a means through which we can transform our heart and our minds. So singing the mantra, especially in a group, becomes a kind of all-enveloping means of meditation. It's new, and it's not something that's been invented. It's a part of a tradition that's thousands of years old, that's been passed down through many generations, and is especially recommended in this age. That's an interesting point that comes up in the ancient teachings of the Bhakti texts, which are called the Vedas. And the Vedas say that in every particular era, there's a kind of practice that is especially meant for self-realization. And in the present age, we are advised to sing the spiritual sound vibration that's passed down. And if you do that, then it'll be effective very quickly. So I like this first element, singing. That's a good idea. What do you all think?
Yes.
Three people like it? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9? Okay. So the second one is dancing. So do you all like to dance?
Yes.
Do you dance all day long? Do you dance at work? At home?
Yes.
Yeah? When do you all dance?
Alone.
When you're alone? Okay. Do you dance to music?
Oh, yeah. Or okay. The music in my head.
Music in your head, you can dance. I don't see a lot of people dancing in San Francisco walking down the street, do you? I mean, anywhere in the world I go, I don't see a lot of dancing going on. I mean, you have to go to very specific places to find dancing. I mean, what is dancing anyway, if you think about it, really? It's kind of, again, it's normally an expression of some kind of happiness. People are moving around the world for different reasons. What do you think the main reason is people move on the 101 freeway? If, by percentage, what would you say? What's their motive?
Work?
How come? Why do they go to work? Because they love it?
Money.
Because money. Okay. Because you have to pay the debt. I owe, so it's off to work I go. I saw that bumper sticker. So that's one way of moving in the world. And in the Bhakti scriptures, that's called karma. Karma means I'm moving because I have a debt. I spent, and now I owe. Did that ever happen to any of you, that you spent and then you owed? Anyone? Two people? Three? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You ever get a credit card? Did you ever spend on it?
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of nice stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
Good comes.
Then you got an envelope in the mail. It said, you owe me. I'm going to pay it back, right? So this is karma. Karma means I work in the world, I'm taking natural resources, I'm using things, and afterwards I have to pay. Now let's try an experiment. Let's move up. Everybody move up by 7.2 inches. Are you ready? Let's see if you can do it. 7.2. Count it out and move up. We fit as many as 1,000 people in here, so don't worry. That looked more like 2.7. You can come all the way up, because there's more and more people coming in the back, and they're caught in traffic, so that they'll come. So feel free to move close. Don't be shy. Welcome. It's so nice to have you here. Thanks for coming. So dancing is a part of bhakti. And how do you dance in bhakti? No answer. Okay. I'll teach you what I know. I learned this from my spiritual master, who started the bhakti movement in the West, and he taught us a dance that's been passed down over many, many generations, the Bhakti dance. And you can do it at home, or you can do it here at the Bhakti Center, you can do a Bhakti dance. Would you like to learn it?
Yes.
Okay, five people. Well, the rest of you cover your eyes and you can watch if you don't want to see it.
Give me a little something there.
Okay, so this dance step is called the Swami. And it's pretty easy to do. She's going to give you a little rhythm here. So now with the Swami, all you have to do is step from side to side. This is the first part like this. Are you ready? Let's try it. Anybody wants to try the Swami step, just stand up for a second. Keep going through. Just make sure you have a little space. Now step side to side with the music. Side to side. Okay, part two of the Swami. Put your hands in the air and keep stepping side by side. Very good. Now here's a variation of the Swami. You can put one hand up and one down like this. Switch sides and the other way. Number one. Two. Three. Now watch my feet. I'm going to step behind. A little stylized. Step behind. Sorry. Very good. He's good. Good, good. Now try chanting along and doing this one. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama.
One hand up, one hand.
Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna.
Other hand up.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Step behind.
Hare Rama, Hare Hare.
Give yourselves a hand. Oh, Mark, you're really good. Come on, it's for you. So this Swami step has been passed down over many generations, and if you go to a Bhakti gathering and the singing starts, you're allowed to stand up and dance. Sometimes people think that you have to sit still during the singing and the chanting. Not so. Remember, you heard it here. Feel free to stand up and start dancing, and you'll see what happens. Then other people will feel permission to stand up and they'll start dancing. And then more and more, and then the whole room will start dancing. And then people outside, they'll see you dancing inside, they'll start standing down the street. People going in their offices, they'll walk in like this. Salesforce, people in the big building, and then everyone will stand up from their cubicle, they'll start dancing. And they'll come down in the street. I mean, what if one day we came into San Francisco and everyone was dancing and singing? Now, I'll tell you another secret about this dancing. You put your hands in the air, and You know how, like, if you dance a little bit vigorously, maybe if you have keys or a phone or anything in your pocket, it might come flying out? Has that ever happened when you're running or moving around and things fell out of your pocket? So we carry a lot of cares and worries in our heart. When you put your hands in the air and you dance, it all comes flying out. Who knows where it goes? It just disappears. But afterwards, you'll feel different. And this is one of the most sublime aspects of bhakti, is dancing. We were actually, as human beings, we're meant to dance. We're very symmetrical. You know, the fingers, they're actually delicate. They're kind of beautiful if you hold them right. And people all over the world celebrate dance. You know, every culture has their kind of dance. So the bhakti dance is meant to purify the heart, uplift. And if you want to know how to get rid of all the problems in your life, would you like to know?
Yes. Yeah.
What I tell you, but we're out of time. It's to dance. Dance, do the bhakti dance. Try the swami and sing the mantra. If you sing the mantra and you do the dance, and if you try this every day, you'll feel not only spiritually healthy, but you also, your heart will become healthy too by dancing. It's very good for you in all ways. Bhakti is a very balanced process. So singing's natural. Everyone sings when they're happy. And if you're not happy, sing, then you'll become happy. And dance whenever you can. I'm writing a book soon. I'm writing another book now, but soon and the book will be called Never Miss a Chance to Dance. So when you have a chance, dance. Don't pass it up, because we don't know how many chances we have to dance, do we? Does anybody here know? Nobody knows, right? So when you get a chance, dance. I mean, in this body, in this life, how many chances do we get? So take the chance when you can. Now, I'm going to look at the card again, because I really like this card, and we've talked about singing, dancing, learning. Now, this is an esoteric truth, and that is spiritual beings, and that's according to the bhakti scriptures what we all are. True, we're living within a material body. We're not the body, but we're living within a body. Now, our nature, according to the ancient wisdom texts, is that we like knowledge. And you might notice this if you go on a bus or a plane or train, that people always have their nose in something. I mean, it used to be books, and nowadays people look at electronic devices. They like to look at things and read things, find out stuff. Still, there's bookstores all over the world, and you know, books are not going away. I recently wrote a book which included several chapters about books, the history of books. Yeah, it's true, actually. And there's a book, a famous book called How to Read a Book. I read that 2 years ago. But my book traced out the history of books and reading and so forth. And in the process, I was looking at the present state of the world, and the statistics show that as much as ever in history, people are reading books all over the world. Even paper books are not going away, even though we have electronic books. We're not losing ground on the paper book. The point I'm making is we like to learn. It's our nature. It's edifying to learn. It makes us grow. It makes us feel more whole when we learn something. So the Bhakti Center includes learning. And the learning is specifically dedicated to a branch of knowledge that has to do with higher energies and how we relate to them, and how we can be more in contact with higher energies. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who's speaking to his disciple, Arjuna, points out that there are higher and lower energies in the world. And he names them. Shall I name them?
Yes.
You want me to name all the lower energies? You sure? Should I go ahead?
Yeah.
You got to give me permission, or I'll feel a little shy to do it. Okay, so he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhumya apo analovayu kamano bhudirevacha ahankara ityame vidna prakritir ashtada. That means earth, water, fire, air, ether, which means like it's very subtle, ethereal. Ether, mind, still material, intelligence, and ego. These are all gross and subtle elements, and he calls them bhinna, or separated, inferior energies. Now you want to hear about the superior energy?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, three people, everyone else cover your ears. Superior energy is you. He says that besides these lower energies, there's a higher energy, which is you. And who are you? You're the one who animates the body. You're the one who lights it up. You're the one who makes it go. Actually, this is a robot. When I get sick or I hurt myself some way or another, I always say, my robot's not working properly. Because really, that's what it is. It's a biomechanical robot. And there's a little hole in the front that I put biofuel into. Did any of you take any biofuel today?
Yes.
You did, eh? Okay. So biofuel comes from the sun. The body's fueled by that. But the body's not me. I'm the one who runs the body. I'm the one that animates the body. And when I come in contact with material elements that I just named, and I try to manipulate them in different ways, that's what makes the world the way it is. That's why it's moving around, because the conscious living entity is moving them. Now, in the science of bhakti, there's great emphasis on understanding the difference that higher and lower energies make in our life. So there's a very ancient scripture called the Upanishad. Has anybody heard this? Upanishad?
Yeah.
You all been studying. These are very ancient scriptures. They're written in Sanskrit. In fact, the kind of Sanskrit they're written in, it's called Vedic Sanskrit. It's very complicated. There's certain meters you have to chant it in and so forth. And we're going to ask Priya Kishori, who's sitting right over here. She happens to be a Vedic Sanskrit expert, to chant a verse from one of the Upanishads or from the Purusha Sukta. And you'll get a sense for what it sounds like. Would you like her to do it?
Yes.
I'm not convinced at all that you're willing.
Yes.
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 I'm slightly convinced.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, everyone sit up straight. These Vedic mantras are very powerful. You want to make sure you take them in through your ears.
So this first one is the first verse of the Isha Upanishad. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
You want to hear one more?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I do. Can you do something from Purushottam?
This is the invocation of the Purushottam. Tachamyaravranimahe gatum yagyaya gatum yagyapataye daivi swastirastunaha swastirmanushebhyaha urvam jigatu bheshajam shamno astudvipade shamchatushpade Om Shanti 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 Hari Om.
These mantras describe the difference between lower energy and higher energy. And in the first Upanishad that she quoted from, there's a statement that one result is obtained by connecting with the higher energies, and a completely different result is obtained by connecting with the lower energies. Does that make sense to you all?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever felt connected to the lower energy and it had a kind of a Well, I won't put words in your mouth. Have you ever connected to the lower energy and felt yourself being affected in a certain way?
Yes.
What ways would you describe it if you're going to use adjectives? Connected to lower energy.
Sluggish.
Sluggish. That's a good word, sluggish. What else?
Agitation.
Agitation? Who said that? Agitation. Okay, so agitated means that you're not necessarily being productive, you're not in an introspective state, but you're just, your mind's being pushed around back and forth in an agitated state, like a washing machine's just agitating. Any third one?
Cold. Anxiety.
Cold? It could be cold. Anxiety?
Anger.
Anger. Yes. There are many descriptions of what happens when we come in contact with the lower energies that are in the world. Then, the Upanishad said, there's higher energies. And when you connect with the higher energies, it says, you'll experience certain qualities within yourself. And I'll describe some of them. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes what it feels like when you touch the higher energy. He says, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, na shochati na kangshati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. And this means that when you touch the higher energy, that you will feel joyful for no reason. Mm-hmm. You ever feel happy for no reason?
Yep.
That's when you come in contact with that higher energy, you just feel joyful. And the reason is because that's your nature. And when you touch the higher energy, your original nature of joyfulness is revealed. Then he says, Nashochati Nakangshati, which means that you won't feel hankering and you won't feel lamentation. So let's look at that just for a second. When I engage myself in the world and I become attached to things, I never feel quite satisfied. For instance, I once went into recently buy a pair of walking shoes. I saw the kind I wanted. I didn't want to make much of a fuss about it. So I called the store. They had them. I went in there. I bought them. I felt satisfied for a minute, but when I was walking out of the store, I saw the same shoe in a different color. So then I got in the car, and my mind said, you got green, why don't you get the blue one? And immediately, my interaction with indulging in the happiness of getting some new material thing was suddenly degraded and ruined. My mind, you should have had something else. This is lamentation. And I also hanker. I think, oh, I have to have those in order to be happy. But once I touch them, then I start to lament. Either I get them and they don't live up to what I thought they were, and I feel unhappy, or I don't get them and I feel unhappy that I didn't get them, or I get them and they wear out or they're stolen or something else happens to them. In all cases, I become disturbed one way or another by coming in contact with things. Doesn't mean that we have to give up things, says the Bhagavad Gita, but it means that there's a higher way to interact with the world, to come in contact with a higher energy. And when you do, then you won't have this feeling of hankering and lamentation that you do when you interact with the lower energy of the material world. And that comes through the process of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is selfless service. It means serving without any motivation. And when you do that, then you immediately feel happy. Can I give you an example of that? One time I experienced that, it happened to me.
Yes.
Okay. So once, when I had become a monk and I moved into the monastery, and I became very hungry one day near lunchtime, and the lunch bell rang. I was 16 at the time, and so I jumped up. I ran to the lunchroom because I have one main thought in my mind, is that I must eat. And when I got in there, the other monks, I saw that the person who normally serves out the food at that time was absent. And I had already been assigned, if he was absent, then I had to take over. So I thought, oh no. And then I remembered a phrase I had heard from my teacher, and that was, when you do selfless service, then you'll feel naturally satisfied. So, reluctantly, I admit, I went over and took my place in the line to serve out. And as I started to serve the other monks, my hunger faded away, and suddenly I started feeling a natural sense of happiness. Actually, it was like joy. And this is the result of bhakti, or selfless service. When you serve selflessly, especially when you direct that service to our original divine source, it's like watering the root of a tree. When you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches become nourished. So similarly, we become nourished through bhakti. We rise above the lower energy, which produces this hankering and lamentation. And then the third quality of touching the higher energy that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is that your relationship with all living beings becomes very harmonious, because you start to see them as spiritual beings, not in terms of where they're from or what kind of body they have, but you see each person is like a walking temple. Temples, the divine essence is within the temple. Spiritual presence is there. So every body, and how many different kinds of bodies are there?
7 billion.
We'll name five. Like species.
Cat.
Cow.
Fish.
All seas, gotta be seas. Okay, fish.
Camel.
Catfish. Camel. One more and you've got it.
Chicken.
All of those sea animals, you would observe and understand that we're kin. We're related. It's not that this is some lower species, but actually you feel a connectedness with all life in the world. Even an earthworm. See an earthworm going across the path and you realize there's a divine essence within the earthworm, within the ant, within the spider. You respect all life. This is the nature of someone who touches the higher spiritual energy. So this science, who says the third part of this is learning, is to learn what the ancient wisdom texts teach, the basic principles, how to interact with the world in such a way that you can touch the higher energy and transform the lower energy into higher energy. Is that possible? Mm-hmm. Have you seen any material elements that are transformable in this world?
Not material.
How about iron? Does anybody have an iron bar in your car? If you do, I want to talk to you afterwards about why you have that. Let's say you have an iron bar, and you take the iron bar and you put it in fire. What will happen?
Melt.
Now I'm talking about a hot fire.
Melt.
It will melt. First, before it melts, it will become red hot. And it will become malleable. You can bend it. In fact, I was in Japan recently, and I was in an ancient town called Takayama. It's way up in the mountains. And they still have a blacksmith industry there. So I saw a blacksmith, and he was taking an iron rod, and he put it in the fire. I came back an hour later, and the iron rod was now red hot, just like fire. And so, in a similar way, as iron's transformable, it can turn from metal to fire. So similarly, all the things that we have in our life and all the so-called lower energies can also be transformed into higher energy. This is the science of bhakti. How to transform everything into higher energy. And how do you do it? By putting in the fire. And where does the fire come from? Spiritual sound vibration and selfless service. So if you use something for a higher cause, for a spiritual cause, it transforms, it becomes spiritualized. So bhakti's got a lot of important knowledge. It's knowledge that we can actually use to become happy. So the Bhakti Center, the third point that I saw in here is learning. And you'll notice there's a lot of books on that shelf. I'll teach you a yoga asana. You're sitting here, turn your head to the left and look up and see those books. And you'll notice that there's many, many books, and all of them are full of these mantras that Priya was singing, and each one of them has very deep meaning that can be employed in your life. And the last two, meditate. And boy, it doesn't seem like there's that much time to meditate nowadays, and there's a lot of distractions. Do you ever find that?
Yes.
Distractions?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where do they come from, mostly?
Mind.
From your own mind. This is a point that comes up in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks, when a person's fixed in spiritual consciousness, how does that person sit and how does that person walk? And it's an interesting question to ask oneself, can I sit? If I sit down, does my mind tell me to get back up again? Has that ever happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
Sit down and meditate, and all of a sudden your mind says, better get back up again?
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's not just me. Where did it tell you to go when it told you to get back up again? You sat down and meditate, your mind said, get back up again. Where did it tell you to go?
Go to bed.
Facebook.
Go to Facebook. Yeah, go to Facebook.
The fridge.
Go to the fridge. Yeah, fridge. There's a half gallon of coconut ice cream calling you. You can hear it in there. It's calling to you. There are so many places those voices come from inside. So in the Yoga Sutras, the second sutra of the Yoga Sutras says that yoga means the stilling of the mind. And 500 years ago, the great saint Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught a method of meditation that is so efficacious. I hate that word. Why did I use it? It's so effective that anyone who practices this kind of meditation will feel oneself after each session to be a little bit transformed towards the spiritual energy. And it's the repetition of the mantra, and there's ways that you can make it more effective. One of the ways is to count how many times you chant the mantra each day. This is called Sankhya Purvaka, means numerical strength, because the mind's very tricky. Have you ever started off on a self-improvement program, for instance, like exercise or something like that, on January 1st, when all the gyms are full? And then by when? January 21st? January 2nd? Your resolve goes a different direction. You get distracted and you realize another year went by and I got 2 days. So in the practice of yoga, it's a discipline, and meditation is a discipline, but it's a very pleasant one if one takes the time each day and practices. So one way that you can do this is to count how many mantras you do every day. And the mantra is the object of meditation, so it's easy. All you have to do is repeat it and listen to the mantra, and the mantra has its own power because it comes from the higher energy. And it will transform your mind gradually and help you to enter into the spiritual realm. I'll teach you a way to chant and keep count. Hold your hand up like this and place your thumb on the middle part of your ring finger and say one.
One.
Now place it at the bottom part of your ring finger, say two.
Two.
Bottom part of your little finger, say three.
Three.
Middle part of your little finger, say four.
Four.
Top part of your little finger, say five.
Five.
Top part of your ring finger, say six.
Six.
Top part of your middle finger, say seven.
Seven.
Top part of your index finger, say eight.
Eight.
Middle part of your index finger, say nine.
Nine.
Bottom part of your index finger, say ten.
Ten.
Now let's try it together. I'll cut a little more quickly. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Everyone got that?
Yes.
So if you do a mantra on each space, then you've done how many mantras?
Ten.
Okay, good. That's the quiz. So if you do 10 mantras in a row, and you're able to concentrate on the sound of the mantra for 10 mantras, then you're at a very advanced level, extremely advanced. If you could concentrate for 5 mantras and not let your mind run off to where?
Facebook.
Rancho Cucamonga or any other suburb in America, it would run off. If you could do it for 5 mantras, you're at the medium level of advancement. And if you can do it for one mantra, you're at the very beginning level of advancement in this meditation. So you can practice this yourself and see how many mantras in a row can I do without my mind running off to another place. Now don't worry if it does, because when your mind runs off, and it will, because that's what minds do, you bring it back. Bring it back to the mantra, and remember that I'm chanting now, and I want to concentrate on the mantra. If you do that regularly, and you hear the sound of the mantra, then there will be an effect. It may not happen to you while you're chanting. Sometimes it will. Sometimes it'll happen after you've chanted, and you walk away to do the laundry. And then all of a sudden, you feel a sense of knowledge and detachment and happiness. Are you all stranded back there? Why don't you come on up here? There's plenty of room. We have room over here, on this side area if you want. This is nice over here too. Make yourselves at home. It's the Bhakti Center. Everybody in San Francisco is welcome. Thanks for coming. Great to see you. Okay, so far, tell me the four things we've talked about that are on the card. Number one?
Fame.
Singing. Number two?
Dancing.
Sounds good so far. Number three?
Learning.
And number four?
Meditation.
I really like what you all do here at the Bhakti Center. And number five?
Eating.
Feasting. Now this is interesting because, I know, when I first came to the Bhakti movement in 1973, I had an idea that in order to be spiritual, you had to fast. So I used to not eat very much at all. So I was skinny as a rail. And when I first came into the Bhakti movement, the Bhaktas came up to me and they said, "You must eat." I said, "I didn't know eating was spiritual." And they said, "Yes, it is when the food is spiritual." So just as I talked before about transformation of energy, when you take ordinary food, name a few ordinary food items.
Rice.
Broccoli.
Rice. That's a very popular food item all over the world. What else? Broccoli? Very popular, especially here in America. Where else? What else?
Kale.
Kale. Rice, broccoli, kale. We got two more.
Potatoes.
Potato, my favorite. Never met a potato I didn't like. And number five?
Beans.
Beans. Of course, rice and beans, they're synergetic. Did you know that when you put rice and beans together, you get 42% more nutrition? Mm-hmm. I read about it in Jamuna's cookbook. So the combinations of food are very important. Nonetheless, they're just ordinary food items, aren't they? You can get them anywhere, people eat them. However, in the science of bhakti, there's a way in which food is an integral part, and eating is an integral part, and cooking is an integral part of spiritual connection to the supreme divine source. And that's because when you cook with love, with the idea that I'm going to offer this to my original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who will accept it if I offer it with a sense of love, then the food becomes transformed from ordinary rice, ordinary broccoli, ordinary beans, ordinary kale, and ordinary, what was the last one?
Potatoes.
How could I forget the potato? It becomes transcendentalized. It becomes what we call spiritual food. There's another name for it in Sanskrit, prasad. Would you like to say that?
Prasad.
Yeah, if you say it really loud, they'll come running out here with prasad to feed you. It's an old trick in bhakti. Prasad, and they come out. So when you take prasad, which means you don't just eat it, but you have a communion with the Supreme through eating. You eat the food and you feel that you're connecting to the Supreme who's given you this special spiritual food to eat. Then you transform your mind, you transform your body. We are what we eat, not just in body, but also mind and in spirit. The vibration of the food we take into our bodies, it transforms our consciousness either upwards or downwards. So prasad, feasting, is one of the main parts of bhakti. In fact, this is a kitchen religion. It all starts in the kitchen. In fact, all families congregate in the kitchen. True or true?
True.
When people get together, main thing is they hang out in the kitchen. Main thing is they break bread together. They want to eat. They want to cook for one another. When you go see your mom, what does she do?
Sure.
Yeah, eat this, you'll die if you don't eat. And so it's out of love. So when you have this combination that they have here at the Bhakti Center, you put all these together, you get a well-balanced spiritual practice. And you don't have to wait till you come here to do it. You can do it in your home, you can do it in your office, you can do it in your car. There's always one of the processes of bhakti that you can do wherever you are and wherever you go. And if you do that, even a little bit, it's not that you have to drop everything and run to the mountains or give up all your possessions or your style. If you have a style, you can keep your style. You just have to change the vibration in your life, some of the food that you eat, and the music that you listen to, which has a lot to do with your vibration. And if you do, then you'll experience the transformation that's promised throughout the bhakti scriptures, that you'll see your life transform in a way that makes you joyful all the time, a way that you're able to discriminate between things that are good for you and bad for you, and you're able to act on not taking the things that are bad, and you're able to embrace the things that are good for you, which is not easy, is it? Please say, it's not easy. I want to make sure it's not just me. So now, we'll just take a few reflections. Anything that you heard so far in the mostly monologue that's stuck in your mind that you can reflect back? Go ahead.
The seven lower spirits? That was kind of deep.
Yeah, the lower energies. The lower energies, yeah. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and
so when you say fire, or when Bhagavad Gita, or whatever, the divine says fire, does that mean the sun?
Well, the sun is the origin of fire, yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah. That stuck to me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the study of energies, and it's very important because we're also energies, and when we connect with higher or lower energies, it affects our life very distinctly in ways we should know about. We should understand the science of how to associate. We'll know why I'm transforming in a positive way or why I'm transforming in a negative way. What else? What
Swami,
did you hear?
Swami dance.
Yeah, the Swami step. You want to learn the Swami dance and teach it to all your friends wherever you go, and you can have a Swami dance party. And it makes a big difference when you get up and you start dancing. You'll find that all the cares and anxiety, we carry like in little pockets. There's subtle pockets we have in our subtle body, but we carry them, don't we? Anybody have any we're carrying around right now?
Yeah.
You got any anxieties? You don't have to say what they are. Just tell me if you have any or not.
Yes.
At least one, right?
Yes.
Okay. When you put your hands in the air and you do the Swami, you can be sure that they'll go flying out, and you'll notice that they go away. So this is a good way to get rid of your cares and anxieties. Put your hands in the air and dance to the spiritual sound vibration, and you'll find that you get purified. What else did you hear?
You have the heart through the ears.
Yes, you fill up your heart through your ears. And the ears are like a channel. In my neighborhood, I live in Burlingame, and around Burlingame, there's little storm drains. You have them here in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever notice them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, then tell me what they say on the storm drains. There's a sign on every storm drain in the Bay Area.
Do not dump, it leads to the bay.
Good for you. You're so observant. It says, no dumping drains the bay. And what picture is on there? For 20 points.
Crab.
What?
Is there a crab?
Is there a crab? There's a fish in Burlingame. Most places has a fish, says no dumping drains the bay, but if a crab would be very appropriate too. Because those poor crabs live at the bottom, and they get the residual of everything that you dump through the drain, and that's the whole point. Whatever you put in there, you may think, it's gone. It's not gone. It went somewhere else. So similarly, as I was walking through my neighborhood one day, and I was doing a kind of walking meditation, I was thinking about my mantra as I was walking past, and I saw that drain. You know, it's got a little grill on it. Then the sign says no dumping drains the bay. And I thought, my ears are like those storm drains. Now, I'm not going to do this, but if I ever got tattoos on my head, I would put on both sides, no dumping drinks today, maybe. Little fish. And then I would be reminded that whatever I dump in here ends up in here. So if you don't like the way your life is going, if you don't like what you're being subjected to, change the subject. Don't subject yourself to lower sound vibration. Don't dump, because everything you dump will end up in the bay of your heart and have a long-term effect, just like it does in the San Francisco Bay. Poor crabs, poor fish. They end up with everything somebody in Burlingame puts in there and ends up in their food. So that's a point to always remember: what goes in here goes in here. A few more reflections. What did you hear? Somebody in the back reflect, because I want to make sure that you were able to hear me back there. Just means any one thing that you heard that stuck.
So,
yes?
I personally connect with the point of, you know, mind wandering all the time, and mind does not want to do what I have, you know, listed down.
Yes.
So it's like I connect to it, and then I also have been practicing like mantra meditation, and it helps. So
thank you for that testimonial. I like the way you put it too, that the mind doesn't want to do what you've listed down. It's like, I made the list, you know, come on, would you cooperate? Like, no, I'm not going to cooperate. I'm going to go the other way. It's like the mantra is compared in some bhakti scriptures to snake taming. So, you see, in India, there's people that they know a certain tune and they play in a flute and the snake comes out. It's like... So with the mantra also, if you do the mantra, the mind, which has an impetus to run off in every different direction for no apparent reason, then becomes transfixed by the sound of the mantra, and it can become tamed, just like you're experiencing. Thank you. That was a really nice reflection. See, reflections are easy. Let's have three more.
Cool.
Confirmed.
Singing, even if you, you said that singing not helps not only when you're in a good mood, but then if you're in a bad mood,
yeah,
it will actually bring it up.
It does, yeah. If you're in a bad mood and you start singing, what's the speak of dancing? I just came from India. I was there for 42 days, I think. And for 30 of those, I was living in a little village in India where we have a kind of a monastery. And every morning, our day starts at 2:45 a.m., you know, everyone gets up, because our first service is at 4:15 a.m. And we go in there, and everyone that's there really wants to be there, and they're very happy to be there. During the particular month I was there, it was a festival month. You know, there's a lot of spiritual festivities going on there. And we have a ceremony early in the morning at 4:15 it starts, and there's music, and there's rhythm, and there's dancing. And sometimes when you get up at 2:45 in the morning, especially after a long flight or something like that, your mind's thinking, can't we do something else? But when you get in there and everyone starts dancing, then immediately you come up to a higher level and you feel joyful and happy. So if you can, if you get an opportunity, dance. Because why?
Never miss a chance
to dance. Coming out in my new book, Never Miss a Chance to Dance. Take two more reflections. What did you hear? One thing that you're taking away from here when you walk out the door and someone grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? What's the one thing you'll tell him?
You don't have to necessarily change your external traits, but rather connect with higher energy.
That's right. You know, how we dress or what our style is, that's superfluous to our spiritual practice. So if you change the internal life, then naturally you'll be become aware and conscious, and you do that through the practice of bhakti. And there's a very famous verse that comes from the most famous bhakti scripture of all, called the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, Stanestita Shrutigatam Tanuvanmanopir. If you want to be successful in bhakti, you don't have to change anything except what you listen to. If you change the vibration that you're listening to, even if you live in the weirdest place in the world, then from the inside out, you'll transform, because the spiritual sound is so powerful. And naturally, everything else will change. And that brings us to our last reflection. Oh, Vaikunthana, please.
Specific meters for the Sanskrit.
That's right. Specific meters for the Sanskrit. We heard from Priya Kishori a little taste of that. But there are simpler ones too. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, the meters are very simple. And I don't know if you all saw it, but recently there was a major study done about Sanskrit. I'm not advocating fluent Sanskrit. But it is available, and anyone can do it. It's not that you have to learn the grammar, because it's a little bit tedious to learn all of it. But you can learn some of the Sanskrit verses, or at least, you know, the simple mantras. And this recent study about language, especially Sanskrit, said that there's what's called a Sanskrit effect. And this major study showed, anybody see this recently? It was mainstream. That by reciting Sanskrit, groups of kids who do this, especially in the UK, that's very much advocated for children, have nothing to do with spiritual culture, but they learn Sanskrit and how to chant it. They measure much higher in IQ, in focus, and so forth. Sanskrit is an extremely refined language. In fact, that's what the word Sanskrit means. It means refined. And it's refined so much that just by saying that language, it helps to realign your brain. What to speak of when you say spiritual mantras in Sanskrit is highly effective. Studied even from an empiric point of view. So I have no idea how long I'm supposed to talk, but I have an idea that there's an end to it at some point, which is probably in 5 minutes. So let's take just a few minutes to chant the mantra, as we've been talking about. If you all vote for it, it's a democratic country, let's vote. Three. How am I doing here? I think I won.
Yeah.
Okay, good. You don't want to recount or something? Okay, so we took the vote. We won, all of us together, to chant. And at any time, if you want to try the Swami step, I think it's okay. You can stand up at any time. And you just haul off and do the Swami. And see if what I told you isn't true. That you'll start to feel happier, cares will fly out from your heart, and you'll become a new person. When you go home, if you have spouse, significant other, they'll look at you and say, "What happened to you? Why are you so happy?" And you'll tell them what?
The Swami.
I did the Swami. I did the Swami.
Okay, let's try.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
I'm going to say the first half and you say the second. So I say Gaur Prema Nandi and then you say Hari Bol. Are you ready?
Yay!
Gaur Prema Nandi!
Hari Bol!
Okay, that was good, but you got to say it much louder. Gaur Prema Nandi!
Hari Bol!
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, that was a 3. Try to get up to a 4.5. Gaur Prema Nandi!
Hari Bol!
I'm going to sing Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and then you listen, and then you can respond, and you'll feel really happy. Are you ready?
Yes.
Nitai Gora Hari Bol. Everybody say Hari Bol. Passport to any devotional place in the world where people are practicing bhakti. All you have to say is Hari Bol. Try it again. First time I went to Hong Kong, I didn't know where it was. I arrived in the middle of the night. The flight was late. I followed the address to the bhakti center there in Hong Kong. It was 1981. I found this big building, apartments. There was all these buttons to push, different language I didn't recognize. It was Cantonese. I looked and I was thinking, which button should I push? So I pushed the button. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. No voice came. Pushed again. No voice came. Pushed again. I was desperate. I didn't want to sleep out in the middle of the street in Hong Kong. Finally, I heard a voice in Cantonese. It came on the intercom. I said, Hari Bol. Next thing I heard was I was walking up the stairs to the ashram and I thought, this is the international passport. Say Hari Bol and the whole world will open to you. Nitai Gora Hari Bol. So, from the bottom of my heart, I thank all the devotees who have given their lives to help open this center. Nanta Chaitanya and the whole team here, Navina Nirada Prabhu, who have spent many months, years actually, coming to the point of opening this beautiful center, and it's so nice. And I, as we were driving down here tonight, and I was thinking for how long the devotees all around the world have been waiting for the practices of Bhakti Yoga for the center to open up. I was feeling exaltation. And I can assure you that the founder of the Bhakti movement in the Western world, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is smiling on all of you for opening the center, as all of us are smiling because of the hard work that you've put in here and continue to do to keep this in such a pristine condition. And I know all of you, many of you have assisted in various ways. So I thank you very, very much for doing this. It seems like a small thing, but actually spiritual vibration always expands. And when it's very pure, and you organize yourselves in such a way so you can do it regularly, it will go out into the whole city and it will have a major impact on the lives of the people of San Francisco. The good people live here. This is a really good place. And the one thing that people are really hankering for is a spiritual experience that's non-sectarian, that's universal. And that's exactly what the leaders of this organization here in this place are teaching to the world. And I thank all of you for your great enthusiasm for coming out. This is an historic event, which is being recorded in different ways, that has the opening of the Bhakti Center West right here in San Francisco, south of Market. Go Premanande! Thank you very much.
Before we cut the ribbon outside, which will be the next exciting part of our program, I want to thank Ajay Shubhri for his wonderful talk. This is a gift for Kasyapa and Vaishali, who have sponsored the first month's rent at Bhakti Center.
There?
Yes.
Haribol. One more time.
Haribol. And then also, if you look at all the beautiful design work here, it's all the work of our wonderful designer, Stacy. And pretty much every day we would call her. what color is this meant to be? You know, where do I buy the paint? Like, just endless questions. And she's always been ready every minute of the day. So we want to thank her so much.
Way to go, Stacy.
Thank you.
Okay, this way for a photo op.
Look at you. Hey, Bob.
So now we want to invite you all to come out on the street, and we're gonna cut a ribbon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Did you grow up there in Palo Alto?
Me too.
You seem like a real deal.
I hope so. I don't know.
45 years.
It's so exciting. It's hard to keep still.
Yeah, can you just hold it in one picture?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Sanskrit, like the back of the hand. That's not an easy point.
What's that? What is Sanskrit?
Sanskrit is like one of the oldest languages in the world.
And just reading it without even knowing it is good.
Well,
you're
saying? Yeah, because it's a powerful vibration. You know, one of the first.
Yeah.
Where's the ribbon?
It's coming, that's coming.
Oh, it's not here yet.
Even in the Bible it says. In the beginning there was the word. And so Sanskrit.
I get the feeling it's an orange ribbon. Am I right?
Definitely. Probably.
Saffron. Orange.
Saffron, definitely.
What should be blue?
Can someone hold this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, where is he going to cut that ribbon for?
I think he went to go get it.
It really is, yeah.
I am aware you could stand to get a much
noisier street.
Oh.
Very quiet. You can actually find parking, too, in the evening.
Are they going to put that right here?
Really, very sweet.
Yeah.
The branding is really
he's tall, so we have to just
I love this.
That is so
clean is the word.
Clean.
It's very clean. Yeah.
And
pristine. Clean.
I like little arrows when you come in here. Get in here.
They look fatal. I thought you had a way to get married
on something. Oh, good idea, good idea.
Eternally be with them.
Yes.
Especially the plastic. Yeah.
It's all transformable. We learned about that in the class. Plastic becomes transformable.
It's transformable after a few millennia.
Dr. George, how do you like this neighborhood?
Wow.
It's great,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's really amazing. Hall of Justice right there.
Is that
right? Hall of Justice is just around
right there.
Room.
That's the Hall of Justice.
We need that.
It has a very powerful feng shui.
Of the Prabhupada movie, when Prabhupada, I felt like I went back 6 years, except just a bit modern.
Yeah. There's a movie that, of the starting of the Bhakti movement by our founder in 1966 in New York. And there's a very narrow hallway. It's still there, 26 cents. And people had gathered, they had no idea what it was. Although he's been chatting for about a year and started holding different classes. And then there's black and white movies that open. So Priya was just saying how it's reminiscent of that. All of us being here together in that little place. And from that one small center, 2nd Avenue, expanded all over the world. To every continent on Earth.
So this will come to pass here in San Francisco, that Bhakti will be spread to every nook and corner of San Francisco. Everybody who agrees with this, please say Hari Bol.
Hari Bol!
Okay, it's going to happen. Vaikunthanath Prabhu, could you help me? Vaikunthanath is a he also started in New York in 1966?
67.
So he was part of that 26 7th Avenue. So he and I are going to cut the ribbon together.
Oh,
so it's symbolic.
Yay.
Okay.
That's great.
You just made it.
Yeah.
Hari Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hold it nice and tight. We hereby inaugurate the Bhakti Center West and pray for the help of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada to make this a grand success. Thank you for considering our request. Om Tat Sat. So, everyone who's here tonight for this historic event will receive special blessings from the spiritual personalities who have started the Bhakti movement. This is something you remember for the rest of your lives and beyond, and that will do good for people all over San Francisco and the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Anant Chaitanya Prabhu, who is very steadfastly maintain this pace of staying in San Francisco, come what may, to open the center, and the other core team members. Name?
Alex.
Bhakti Alex.
Don't have any number.
Who else do we have?
Stacy and.
Stacy, come
Carly
up.
Is going to be part of the team.
Come.
Loka Bandhu.
Come here.
Loka Bandhu did so much of the...
Where's Loka Bandhu?
Handyman work.
Come, come. And, can you stand here?
Yeah.
Stand right here. This is the sign that we're going to be successful. Anyone else? And we're remembering very deeply Naveena Nirada Prabhu. Yeah. Who's actually, it was several years ago when I was with him at Govardhan during that retreat I was talking about, we do every year. And
right.
We were sitting talking, and he was thinking, where in the world to go? Because he was free to go anywhere. And we discussed, why don't you do something in San Francisco? So he said, I'm coming. And from there, Ananta Chaitanya came, and then all these wonderful souls who are helping to expand Krishna consciousness.
Thank you all of you for coming and being part of it. It's wonderful to have you here. Please bless us to continue. So we'll have some more at Kirtan. There's a wonderful feast waiting for you, and we'll give some updates about events inside. And thank you very, very much.
Hare Krishna.
Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, hey, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Not today, our marman. Not today, our marman.